Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. So last week, I played a repeat show because it was right after I got married to the love of my life, Brian Brewer. You've heard him on this program. So I'm in sort of post-marital bliss, although it feels like it's going to just go on and on and on. But I'm so glad that Sherry Winston has returned to this program. Hello, Sherry.
Hello, Diana. Congratulations. That's just awesome, that getting married.
Yeah, you know, I was, next month it'll be 18 years since my last husband died. So 18 years a widow. So, and I was very particular and fussy because Charlie was a good man and Brian is such a good man. And I'm hoping, I don't think you've met him quite yet, but you will.
Yeah. I look forward to it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And so I just had to interject that little bit of personal news. Last time you were on, which was 2 weeks ago, we called the show hashtag Good Sex 2. And that was, we spoke about how to have more pleasure. And, and women, and then women who get into situations where they're having second thoughts and even bad sex and what to do. So we're going to look at some of those things, too, because I think it's really, really appropriate, the climate these days, right? It's just ripe for having these sorts of discussions. You know, even Donald Trump and the porn star Stormy Daniels and all of that mess, you know, it brings it up, doesn't it?
It does, and yet, you know, we live in a culture. It's a very strange thing where sex is sort of used to sell everything, and it's talked about kind of all the time in a very superficial way, but we don't do a good job of actually educating people about consent, boundaries, communication, and really helping people get over their shame and their inhibitions around sex. And so, and it's, you know, the most compelling force in the universe, and then we are surprised when people wind up in challenging situations or misbehaving. And I'm just want to clarify, I'm not talking about rape and assault here, but I'm talking about miscommunications kind of misbehavior in sexual encounters, where things just don't go the way you would have liked. Right. And so this is all stuff that we need to be talking about so that we can really have a culture that's sexually educated in a deep and whole way, so people know how to manage the compelling force of erotic energy.
The compelling force of erotic energy. Listeners, if you are listening to this show live, you have a chance of winning one of Sherry Winston's books, which is Women's Anatomy of Arousal. And only if you were the first one to call in. And our producer will ask for your name and address off the air, and then Sherry will send you one of her books. So the call-in number is 888-874-4888. And Sherry is the most amazing author and person and just everything. Sherry, you have so much talent, and I know that you are a celebrated sexuality teacher, and you've won awards for your books, and you're a medical professional too. And an artist. I mean, the art that you drew in your book is just fabulous. I
really appreciate you mentioning that and all of that background. And I just also have to add, especially as we're in this topic, I'm a lifelong learner. Everything I teach around sex is stuff that I myself have learned.
Yes.
And so, you know, what we're going to talk about today, you know, I'm not going to be sitting here going like, oh, people, you shouldn't be doing that or you're doing it wrong. It's really just to say, you know, I've made that mistake. I've had that problem. And this is how I learned to not have that happen anymore. So that's
so everything
really awesome.
You teach,
right?
you learn from. And I can say the same thing, too.
Yeah,
and
right?
Of course, lifelong learning is also extremely good for longevity because those who remain curious they age and engaged in life, oh, what a difference it makes. So this is really good. And you're, you know, the first time I heard you was at an A Sector Quad S, I get them confused, conference in 2014. And boy, you know, for a change, I learned something brand new at that conference from you, because I've been doing this work for 35 years. So, of course, in the first many years, I learned a lot of things new. And then it's, you know, as I become more accomplished and so on. But what I learned from you was about vestibular bulbs. And we talked about that last time, and I think the important thing about vestibular bulbs, well, there are several, but one is that men and women have the same amount of erectile tissue, and lots of people don't know that.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of the things that when I learned this in mind, I was already certified nurse, midwife, gynecology practitioner, registered nurse, licensed massage therapist, childbirth educator.
I'm so glad you just mentioned all of that, Sherry, because those are part of your important credentials. So yes, go on.
Yeah, but you know, so I was already working at that at that high level professional level before I started to learn and discover that I had not been taught the correct anatomy of female genitalia. That blew my mind, and that really got me started on my whole path to discovering what was there, learning about it, and teaching other people about it, which is what
we were
talking
about. So do you think that in medical schools these days there's been some correction, or is it still not so good?
No, it's not. It's still not. The culturally accepted map of female genitalia is incomplete, and that's being taught to medical professionals and midwives and sexuality teachers and therapists and counselors. It's just almost nobody has this information, which is why I'm on such a mission to get this information out there.
And you're doing such a good job. Yes, go on.
Well, we talked about that last time, so this time I want to make sure we get to part two. So I'm just going to tell people, if you want to hear about the anatomy, go listen to the archived version of the show we did 2 weeks ago, because we talk about it there, right?
Yes, that's right.
Or be the first caller and you'll get my book.
Yes, so any of you, you're likely to be a woman, but if you're a man, I encourage you. Men need to listen to this, because men are better lovers when they have more knowledge. And we talked about having bad sex last time. And so knowledge is power, and when a man really knows a woman's arousal patterns and her anatomy, he is a better lover.
Women need to know what they've got and how to work and play with their equipment. And if you partner with women, you want to learn how to do that as well. So, if it behooves all of us to learn as much as we can about ourselves and our partners.
Yes. And it's all in your books. I have recommended your books to so many clients, and they've benefited a lot. These days, all they have to do is whip out their smartphones and take a picture of your book, the cover, and then they have four books. Then they have exactly how they need to order it. Succulent Sex Craft is... Was that your first book or
my
the second
book?
Yeah, right. And then Women's Anatomy of Arousal is the first.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the one. If any of you are listening and you have a question for Sherry, and she is an expert, a real expert, and I'm just so happy to have her on the program. Again, you are such a wealth of knowledge. So we want to talk a little bit more in depth about communication and boundaries, because if women get into sexual situations where they're not having good sex, or they're having second sexual thoughts, and not good sex, maybe even bad sex, what to do?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this is important because would you address that, Sherry?
I would love to. This is after this topic of anatomy and orgasm and pleasure, the next sort of topic that's near and dear to my heart is about really understanding boundaries, what they are, what they mean, how to have beautiful boundaries. And also how to communicate about them.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, I look at this as part of our learning journey, and that we really have to learn what we want and what we want to do and what we don't want to do, particularly in the sexual realm with partners. And I think, again, because of the shame and the inhibition, the first thing I just want to mention is that we're not going to have good, healthy, beautiful, flexible, and exquisite boundaries if we're making decisions while we are inebriated. So if you I'm not saying about having one drink or a couple of tokes, but if you're really inebriated, you're not going to know. And I think a lot of people wind up in sexual situations that don't turn out so well for them because they've gotten inebriated. And they've done that because they're uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable with their sexuality. They're uncomfortable with their desire. And somehow they think that if they're really blotto, they can do. It will lower their inhibitions, which it will. And they'll be able to do the things that they think they want to do or that they should do. And so the first thing I have to say is that the only way to really have exquisite boundaries, to really know yourself, is to be making decisions while your brain is working. And let
That's
me tell you what
point.
The other
yeah.
thing is. The other thing that makes us stupid is arousal itself.
Yes,
arousal
say more,
makes
please.
Us stupid. The more, right, the more turned on we are,
mm-hmm.
we get into that state when we're turned on where we don't care about the consequences. Well, I don't care. Yeah, just let's go, right? So
mm-hmm.
when we're in that state of arousal, it turns off the part of our brain that does the thinking and the judging and makes the wise decisions. And, of course, if you combine arousal with some inebriants, well, you're going to make terrible decisions, right? And then you're going to have what I call the morning after waking up and going, I can't believe I was so stupid. I can't believe I did that, or I can't believe I didn't use birth control, or I didn't use a condom, or I can't believe I had sex with that person, even though I'm not supposed to because I have relationship agreements or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these, I can't believe I was so stupid last night or yesterday or whenever, moments happen because we haven't gotten clear about what our boundaries are with ourselves, and then we haven't communicated that well to a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, I teach some classes around this, and years ago came up. Yeah, yeah, and it's very interesting because people really get so much out of these classes because no one's ever taught them about boundaries and how to check in with yourself and figure out what it is you want in this situation. And you can actually check in with different aspects of yourself. So say you're at a party and you meet an attractive person and you're thinking maybe you'd like to have sex with this attractive person and they seem interested. You have the opportunity at that moment to check in with yourself and say, does this feel safe? Am I attracted to this person? Does this feel like it, you know, would having sex with this person be an empowering thing to do? And by the way, what I'm using here are the chakras, the 7 energy centers. So your safety centers, your root chakra, and then your genitals are like, am I attracted? Is this juicy? Then comes your power center. And then your heart. Is this going to be good for my heart? Good for my heart. Is this going to be a self-loving thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
Is my heart at risk? How's the communication? That's your throat chakra. How's the communication here? Do I feel like I could say what I need to say to this person? Can they hear me? And then you've got your intuition and your intellect. And then if you relate to it, your spiritual center. Is this good for my spirit? Is this part of my spiritual path? Or does this go against my spiritual beliefs, right? So you can check in and get answers from all of those parts of yourself about what you want to do in this situation. And then you'll be totally clear. And if it's a yes, then you get to communicate that to the other person. Then you get to be a good, clear teacher of what it is you're interested in, what you're available for, what you're not, and then find out the same about them. And this idea of having an adult, mature conversation with somebody about would you like to get sexual? What kinds of things would you like to do? Does this feel good to you? Do you have any relationship agreements with anyone else that we should be respecting here? What kinds of things would you like to do? And the idea that you could have that conversation, this kind of blows some people's minds, the thought of having a conversation like this. And there's a number of things that people will come up with objections, like it's not sexy, it's not spontaneous. But I got to tell you, I think it's totally sexy.
I think it is.
You know,
if you're, and of course you cannot have this sort of honest discussion if you're drunk. I mean, you really need to have a clear mind. And yeah, it's. So important, if you're going to get naked with somebody, you need to have this honest discussion. Otherwise, there's likely to be a lot of guilt and remorse the next morning.
And miscommunication.
And miscommunication.
Right? Because, for example, you could say to someone, well, you know, intercourse would not be on the menu.
Yeah.
That would just be too intimate for me. But you could say, but, you know, oral sex would be good. I'd like that.
Right.
And, you know, we also have this weird idea somehow that if you're getting sexual with somebody and you haven't had these kind of conversations, but that you still somehow, once you get started, everything should be on the menu.
That's such a good point. Yes, expand on that, Sherry.
Well, for example, you could say, well, you know, I'd love to cuddle and talk, but I want to keep our clothes on. I would love to get naked together and make out, and hand sex would be okay. But no oral sex, no intercourse. And does that work for you? And then you, before you start doing anything, know where that boundary is. And there's none of that. Oh, my gosh. I remember so many times when I was young being in a situation and thinking, I didn't necessarily want to have intercourse. But, of course, we'd had no conversation because I didn't know that you could or you should or how to. And then you'd sort of be feeling like, well, I don't want this person to think I'm going to do things I'm not going to do. So then maybe you pull back, or you wind up, or they wind up sort of trying to push further, and you have this whole kind of tangled, fairly unpleasant, weird dance going on. And at the time, it never occurred to me to just say to somebody, these are the activities I would be up for engaging in with you. How about you? What would you like to do? And that just sets the stage for the other conversations about safer sex or contraception that might also be necessary to have. And then within that framework, say you come to an agreement, then you can have so much fun because you can relax and play with each other, you know, right up to the edge of the boundaries you had agreed upon. And it's way more fun to be able to do that than to be sort of skirting the edge and not sure where the edge is and all of that. So,
well, I can certainly relate to what you're saying, because in my 20s, and this was way before I went to graduate school and got so informed. in my 20s, I didn't have these conversations.
No.
These clear conversations. And that's one big advantage of maturing. But people, if they listen to information like this and raise their consciousness, you all who are listening, even if you're in your 20s, you can benefit.
Even in your teens.
Even in your teens, of course.
There's no reason that once somebody says to you, it's possible to have these conversations,
right.
And in fact, here are some ways to do it. Here are some things you can say. You can practice saying these things so they won't be so hard to say to somebody.
So it's kind of like a rehearsal. When years ago I did some talking to teenagers about sex. I'm sure you do it a lot now.
Oh, yes.
But I would say things like, if your boyfriend says, well, if you really loved me, you'd do it, meaning having intercourse. Mm-hmm. And then the response for a woman who's not totally on board should be, if you really loved me, you wouldn't put pressure on me like this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good response, and that's a boundary, isn't it?
It is, and what I am always looking for in partners is somebody who's utterly respectful of those boundaries. In fact, if I went on a date and laid out those boundaries and then that person was trying to push past the boundaries, that would let me know I wasn't interested in being with that person. Right. Right. I don't want to be with anybody who isn't going to be utterly respectful of my boundaries. But, of course, if I haven't communicated my boundaries, it's going to be hard for somebody to be utterly respectful of the boundaries because they won't know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's my job, to make sure that they know where my boundaries are. And this is where we often get into trouble, I think, because if we haven't done a good job of communicating that to someone, you know, it's like we put up a fence in the dark, right? And then somebody goes and trips over the fence and goes crashing through the fence, but we didn't put a light on it. We didn't say, here's the line, here's the edge. And so sometimes people who would have respected that boundary go crashing over it because they didn't know where it was.
Mm-hmm.
So it's our job to let other people know where our boundaries are. In a way that's clear, and also in a way that is in alignment. Like, we shouldn't be saying no with our words, but yes, with our body language.
Yes, and of course, if there are game, a few drinks on
board, no, no,
you can't do that. Clearly,
no, no.
Or if a woman is stoned, it just you can't convey it very well. I wanted to get your reaction to this. I was in doing my homework for this show. I came upon some research from the psychologist Aaron Sell, S-E-L-L, and he has shown that strong men and pretty women, those who over the course of evolution have had the most power to cause harm or withhold benefits, are angered more easily than their peers. The primary benefit of anger for an individual, this psychologist says, is preventing oneself from being exploited. Well, just think, if a woman is clear about this, she is less likely to have to experience sexual harassment.
And coercion and pressure and even assault.
Exactly. I mean, this is an evolutionary point. This has been going on for ever. Strong,
really interesting
men, powerful men, and pretty women. And we come back to Trump and Stormy Daniels is an obvious example in the headlines these days.
Right. Well, what about powerful women?
Yeah, okay, let's talk about that. I love that.
It's an interesting thing, right? So, first of all, I think being a powerful person is attractive whatever your whatever kind of plumbing you own.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I mean, I'm intrigued enough to actually maybe go look up that study because I'd love to know how they define those characteristics and what else they looked at.
Yes.
But anyway, without getting too distracted by that, I just want to say
you're a curious woman, that's great.
Right? This is how we keep learning.
I know.
Always kind of like, oh, isn't that interesting? Because I do think there's a lot of confusion about the evolutionary templates and the cultural template, you know, for us around sex. So our cultural template can have a lot of what I was just talking about, that kind of, you know, the woman is supposed to be the gatekeeper of sex, and
right.
So it's her job to say no, but really mean yes, and no, but
all the confusion
on enough, and I'll give in, and that the job of the man is to push for sex and push past her boundaries and to convince her she wants it or get her so turned on that she gives in. And I think we would all benefit greatly from really rejecting that whole script, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Negative.
And, of course, it, what goes on in college campuses these days, it's confusion and miscommunication and drunkenness is. And so we have so many examples of date rape. It's just... pretty awful.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty awful.
It is.
So
it is.
Let us pause here, Sherry, for a minute. I just wanted to remind listeners that if you would like to win or receive, no charge, Sherry's book, one of her books, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, call 888-874-4888 and ask her a question, maybe. Or make a comment, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Question
what
or
do you
comment.
Think of what we're saying.
What we're saying. And it's all very timely, very relevant.
Well, you know, the other, you know, and to, you know, the other side of this is so if you're a young man, say, you know, maybe in a college, maybe not, but if you're a young man, and you have an encounter with a woman, and then afterwards she's really unhappy about it, you are also now at risk of perhaps being accused of, of date rape or assault. And so I would think that men right now, rather than, you know, just like saying, okay, never mind, I'm just going to avoid the whole thing, because that's never really going to happen anyway, it would really benefit men to be so clear and, you know, so clear about checking in. You know, if you're considering being sexual with somebody and they seem inebriated, that's a simple one. Don't have sex with them.
Right.
If you're considering having sex with somebody and you haven't had these conversations, start the conversations, you know. Be the one, you know, either person in a possible sexual encounter can be the one to say, I want this kind of this conversation. And you can even start the conversation by going, this feels really awkward. I feel really weird and shy bringing this up. And this is what's going on. And I think it would benefit us both to have a conversation about our intentions and desires. So even if it feels hard, I'm going to do it because I would like to explore being sexual with you, and I'd love to have a conversation about what that means. What does it look like? What would you be comfortable with? And anyone can bring this up. It doesn't have to be the woman who brings this up. And a lot of times the other person will actually be so relieved that you're starting the conversation. So anyone can start the conversation. You can start it by just saying what's true, which might be that you feel weird or you've never had a conversation like this before, but you just heard this radio show that suggested you do it.
Yes.
So you're giving it a whirl, you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Of course, it takes not only sobriety to do this, but a certain level of maturity. And I'm thinking, too, that when we are accessing the ability to think about the perspective of another as distinct from feeling what another is feeling, that is linked to then benevolent actions. And
the distinction again?
It's linked to benevolent actions. And
before that, you're saying...
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, so much in life, thinking about the feelings of others hinges on emotional regulation. And lots of people don't have that, especially not very mature people. A person who can control his or her own emotions, especially the negative ones like anger, anxiety, and so on, without denying them, will be able to tolerate others' upsets, not prompted to run from them, and to be able to help. So that takes a fair amount of maturity.
It does. These are skill sets. Learning about your own boundaries, learning how to communicate, learning emotional regulation, you know, what to do with your reactions, and, of course, how to communicate in a way that is respectful, how to listen. All of these are skills. These are learnable skills, and they're great life skills. This isn't just about having sex. This is about,
exactly,
you know, everyone in your life, your family, your work, everything. So these are learnable skills, and I do think people can start learning them a lot younger than we learned them.
I agree.
Right?
Well, there wasn't as much, at least I'm older than you are, but, you know, I remember searching around for information not only in my youth, in my 20s, but not only about sexuality, but about everything. So, of course, I went into the right field so I could learn more.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's much more information available. I mean, you've already alluded to it, but this conversation we're having on the air that will be turned into a podcast later, you know, if people listen to this, they can learn. And so the information is there. You just have to be open to it. And of course, course, making changes is very difficult for lots of people. But
it's true. But, you know, also I think, well, two things. One, I think courage is
courage.
Like a muscle.
Oh, I love that word, courage, yes.
Okay, courage. It comes from the heart. It's the same root as the word heart in French. Courage comes from the heart. And it means that it doesn't mean you're not scared. It means you do what needs to be done anyway. Right? So the thing about all of the stuff we're talking about is it takes courage. It takes courage to open your mouth and have the conversation. It takes courage to do something different, to learn.
Yeah.
But each time you do that, it's like strengthening a muscle, and it, it gets easier.
Oh, it's so true. Lots of our behaviors, as we make changes, it is like strengthening a muscle that we get better at it. So I'm wondering, Sherry, if you could impart, and we're still waiting for somebody to call in, but I know this is sort of intimidating for lots of people, and I've opened up the show to callers before, and people don't tend to call in. But if you want to get her booked, you will. But I'm wondering, Sherry, what is really skillful communication in the bedroom? I mean, you talk about this in your book. So, I mean, we've already talked a little bit about it, of course, but maybe we can break it down a little bit more for people.
I would love to. So let's suppose that you're having an encounter with somebody. Ideally, you've checked in and had conversations, so you sort of know where the boundaries of the encounter are. And by the way, this isn't necessarily just a new partner. This is ongoing partners, because just because we're in an ongoing relationship doesn't mean that in any sexual encounter we're having that we're interested or open to all of the different activities. So these are conversations that are ongoing conversations. What do you feel like doing tonight? And then how do we do a couple of important things? One is give feedback. So say someone is touching you, and it's just not the way you love to be touched.
And the only way you're going to get that, the way you love to be touched, is to not depend on psychic sex, which is, if you really loved me, you'd know what I want every moment of the night or day, and it's kind of like going on a treasure hunt without any clues.
Yeah, it's still not fair to our partners, in fact.
Right.
Because then we're going to be pissed off or resentful or disappointed or unhappy because they didn't give us what we didn't tell them we wanted.
Right.
And so, so that psychic partner doesn't exist. That's another one of our cultural myths, that people should know how to turn us on. So your partner's touching you, and it's just not ideal. It's just they're touching you in a way that's fast. They're doing some sort of fast motion. So that's my example, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you say, I don't like that, that's not going to land well.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to hear that. It's critical. It's negative. So we want to give feedback in a way that is positive and appreciative. So, for example, we could use the old positivity sandwich, which means a positive sandwiching a request and ending with a positive. So it might be something like, I love the fact that you're stroking my thigh.
Mm-hmm.
Positive. And
there's a caller.
I would love it if you did it even slower.
Slower.
Or in even a more erotic way to say it, it would really turn me on if you did it even slower. And then oh yes, like that. Thank you.
Oh yes. We have a caller. So
oh,
Alex,
lovely.
Our producer, will put him or her on the air, and will listen. So welcome to Love, Lust, and Laughter, and you're talking to Dr. Diana Wiley and Sherry Winston.
Hi. My name is
Hi.
Sherry. Yeah, thank you very much for your show. Through the years, I've been listening quite a while.
And oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, and to your guests for sharing. Maybe a lot of people are having dinner or something. I don't know, but I managed to get through. So, I appreciate all that information, and especially about communication, because in general, I mean, whether it applies to sexuality and sexual relationships or any relationships, generally people, especially in the U.S., are not, I mean, we're not really like enculturated to be very communicative or clear or whatever, you know. So I think it goes beyond sexuality. It goes into all areas of our life and how we're raised and how schools, what they emphasize. And there's not a lot of tools that are offered to people, or even, you know, everybody's pretty much on their own, or their parents can help them out if they're so inclined.
Well, what you say is absolutely true. And it's communication across the board, not just in the bedroom. And thank you. What is your first name? Or you can make
Derek.
Up one.
Derek.
Derek. Thanks, Derek,
well,
for being a regular listener.
Yeah.
And Sherry, why don't you speak to him?
Yeah, well, I'd add, you made another good point, which is we're not learning this stuff throughout our lives. And this good communication, this is stuff we should be teaching in nursery school.
Yeah.
I would rather have spent time in school learning how to communicate and learning how to be manage my feelings and have emotional maturity, learning how to share and negotiate. We could have been learning that instead of, I don't know, of all of the stuff that we learned in school that we've now totally forgotten and has been useless in our lives. So I think you make a really great point, which is that we haven't been given the models. We usually haven't seen it in our own families growing up, and we don't see it, you know, on TV or in movies. We didn't get it in school. So I feel like, where are we going to get it? It really means we have to go seek it out. We have to consciously find the ways to learn the skills. And it's really useful, I think, to frame it as learnable skills. And there are places to go to learn these things, but you really have to be pretty proactive and decide, this is stuff I want to learn, because it does serve you in all the areas of your life. It's just not about sex. So those are great points, Derek. Thanks for bringing them up.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for all that you're doing to make it available for people to, like, you know, learn these things and you know, take that step if they haven't already.
So, Derek, I want to know, do you have a female partner so that receiving Sherry's book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, would be helpful to you?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good. See, we both, I can speak for Sherry, we both love your openness.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And, you know, it's a pleasure to talk with you both and to listen to the wisdom that you're sharing.
Well, thank you, Derek. And it requires a little bit of, you know, Sherry and I have talked about courage earlier in the program, a little bit of courage to, even though it's somewhat anonymous, but still courage to call into a show like this. So thank you, Derek, for doing that. Do you have any other comment you'd like to make? You've made some very good ones.
Oh, well, yeah, I think it's, the human predicament, the human condition, yeah, sex definitely has an inordinate power because that it is a firsthand experience, is a direct experience, and it's intense, and it's, you know, it's at the core of human evolution. So, yeah, it's very important that, you know, we have an understanding about it and that we honor one another in our practices.
Oh, that's a very healthy attitude, I'd say. Wouldn't you say, Sherry?
I think it's healthy and beautiful.
Healthy and beautiful.
And wise, really, because, yeah, that's, I think, one of the things that life has taught me about the power of sexuality is you can't deny it. You can bury it. You know, you could try and suppress it, but it's going to make its way out. It's either going to come out as, you know, pleasurable, caring, loving connection with yourself and others, or if you try and deny it and repress it, it's going to come out all twisted and ugly. And I actually think that that's kind of the root of a lot of evil and violent behavior, is that life force of sexual energy that's not able to come out in a clean and positive way, so it comes out all ugly and twisted. So,
ugly and twisted, and just to give one example of many, all of the Catholic priests who've been accused of child molestation, and I see that, you know, the repressiveness of sexuality then comes out, as you put it, Sherry, in an ugly, twisted way. If it's not expressed. So Sherry, you and I are both, and I think Derek is picking up on this, we're both in favor of healthy, loving sexuality. And so, Derek, I bet you have a pretty good relationship because you called in and you seem so open.
Well, yeah, it's an ongoing education and revelation, and you know, I'm learning to be that way. Yeah.
Well, see, that's it, and that you continue to learn and stay open is so healthy. Sherry, you can probably say more to add on to what I said.
Well, I mean, I think I'll just say that, you know, this is a lifelong learning journey we're on, and we can make it conscious or not. You know, if it's an unconscious learning journey, then we're just picking up, you know, some of the stupid cultural messages around sexuality and believing them. Or we shift it into being a conscious learning journey where we start learning actual useful skills, like the ones we're talking about, you know, like how to have conversations about boundaries and how to manage emotions, how to give erotic feedback. So these are all learnable. As soon as you get conscious and say, I want to learn how to do this well, I want to learn how to have conscious relationships, I want to learn how to have amazing, awesome, connected sex. And we can. It's all learnable.
Derek, you are just such a sweetheart, such a good man to call in. And so if our producer hasn't gotten your name and address, be sure and stay on the line so that I'll get this, and then I can forward it on to Sherry so she can send you your book.
Oh, thank you so much. And the affection is mutual for you both. And I did talk with him, and he has the information.
Terrific. Terrific.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks for the extended inclusion. I appreciate it, and I look forward to learning more.
Oh, good. And so it sounds like you've been a pretty regular listener, and I'm grateful for that, too.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye, Derek.
Bye. Take
good care of yourself. Bye. Well, Sherry, isn't it nice to know that there are thoughtful, informed, and wanting to be more informed people out there listening? Isn't that great?
It is, and I would imagine that pretty much describes your listeners pretty well right there, because they're going to be the people who are open to learning and who are recognizing the power and the potential of their sexuality.
So you will probably send him your book.
I will.
With gratitude.
I will.
He's appreciative.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
You are something, Sherry. What do you think have been, because how long have you been a practitioner? You are a sex educator.
How long? I mean,
so much more. How long have you been doing
back?
Yeah.
I mean, when I became a massage therapist and a childbirth educator, I was about 20.
Yeah.
So,
okay,
how old am
so
I now?
While,
oh, that would
then.
Be 38 years ago. 38 years ago, love.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm hearing something from the producer. Is there another caller, producer?
Another call.
Yes.
Another call?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to take one more caller then. We're getting up to the end of the program, but let's take the caller, even though they're not going to win a book, but they have a question. So, hello, welcome to the program. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Not really a question, there's going to be a question. I'm actually, I hit and miss listened to the show because at the time I'd been celibate for like 14 years, but I've always, you know, been interested in this topic, so I love the title of your show. So
thank you.
There are occasions that I've always, you know, just popped in and said, I got to listen to that in the archives when I get a chance. So I'm actually calling, I guess maybe I didn't really hear the entire show, so... it's interesting because in the past I've used sex as a healing tool, like clinically in a way, and it wasn't any fun. But now if I'm reuniting with somebody after 18 years, and I think we've each probably healed a lot in our own relationship in what happened between each of us on our own. And now when we get together, I have a feeling there's going to be issues that are going to pop up. And I know you said communicate, but there are a lot of emotional issues that's going to probably rear its ugly head that other people have done to him, and it's going to trigger him when I say the wrong things or the things that would trigger him, and he's probably going to do the same to me. So I'm, you know, not looking to make this a clinical. I just want to have fun in sex this time, and I'm sure it'll heal itself, and we'll probably be able to discuss that after the fact, after enjoying a good sexual encounter, and maybe as emotions start popping up, we can talk about it, but not during the sex. This sounds like, to me, this is what I'm thinking. Is this an experience that you both of you have been through, or do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I understand, but I want to comment, but I want Sherry to comment first. And we only have about five more minutes for the show, but Sherry, you go first.
So I'm going to try and say this really quick. Stuff will come up. You're absolutely right. I recommend to all couples that they have three different kinds of conversations about sex. That you have conversations about sex when you're not having it at all. And that might be conversations about your history or things that you know trigger you or past experiences, as well as a conversation that maybe you had sex last night, the next day you have a conversation, how did it go? What could we do better? So conversations about sex while you're not having sex at all. Conversations that you, not really conversations, but communications you have during sex. And there's an art to doing that well, which I briefly mentioned earlier in the show. So if you didn't hear that, you might want to listen to that. But how you communicate during sex in ways that will enhance the erotic experience and not take you out of it. And then the last one are what I call playpens, and that is setting up a time and space to play a learning game. And so that might be a game around communication or feedback or touch or ways you like to be sexually pleasured, or it might have a healing component to it. So those are the three different ways that you can communicate, and I recommend all couples have all three of those conversations or types of communication. Okay, that was my shortest version I could give.
I think it's great. And I would just add that you I totally support what Cherry said. It's excellent advice. But that you be honest. Say, you know, I've been celibate for 14 years, and I'm looking forward. I'm excited to think that I can be sexual again with you and that we can have some sexual healing. I don't know much about your potential partner or partner. But,
we've been together for like 9 months before this all when it sort of he pushed me away, and now I've been waiting for him all these years. It's So I know that we've had good sex, but it was very rare, and it was like I said, because I knew it was going to be healing, and I couldn't handle it, and I needed to take breaks. And you know, this is very good advice. I'm going to try to get that book, even though I didn't win it. That's okay. The other man sounded very good. He deserved it.
Oh, you're so sweet.
I didn't call in for that reason. I figured, let me...
I know. And you make me think I should open the lines more often to callers, because I don't do it enough, I think. Anyway.
A lot of information you got to share, so you have no choice sometimes. Okay, thank you. Did you have anything else you wanted to share? I forgot your name.
Well,
I'll just say
one other thing, which is communication.
Right.
You know, really authentic, honest communication. So I'm sort of echoing what Diana had to say. How you're feeling, what's up, just, you know, bring everything up and out and let it be clear, let it be on the surface. And and that's your best bet for having this turn into the wonderful thing you're hoping it will be.
We're both older now. I mean, so much older. It's time not to fool. We're not fooling around. Well, fooling around, yes. Fooling around for fun. But not really fooling around.
You're not fooling around at fooling around anymore.
Yes, fooling around, but not fooling around like wasting time here. We don't have any time.
Oh, and there's our final music.
Thank you
so much, caller, for calling in. Thank you, Sherry. I want to have you back sooner as opposed to later, because you're such a beautiful guest. Thank you.
Se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore.